Welcome to Queued Up with Ziz and Pam. The question on the table is, are we preparing students for life in the 21st century? So Pam and I are two people who've come together for the health and well-being of students. And we're gonna do a quick intro and I'll let Pam start. But what's really cool about the two of us is we both have three children. She has three females and I have two and one. So Pam, why don't you just share with the audience your introduction and why you're doing this?
Yes, so I'm a parent. I am a businesswoman. I am someone who is profoundly interested and impacted by the mental illness that I'm seeing in my community of youth. And so I went back to grad school to NYU for an online program of school counseling, learned a lot about higher ed, and in that process stopped and decided to write a blog about what I saw happening in the economy, in the job market, our school system. At the same time, I became involved with the grandson of Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And we have, together with a few others, founded the Viktor Frankl Institute of America and are working on some books and film with this whole issue of meaning and humanness as the center of our worlds. So that's what I'm interested in, and I'm passionate about this subject, as are you, which is just why we're here.
Yeah, very timely, huh? Very, very timely. Yeah, as I said earlier, just, you know, I have three children, all whom have graduated from college. I was the first person to have graduated from college in my family, so it was a blessing for me to see my three graduate. And very much like you, I've worked in higher education at the University of Maryland. I also do a lot of work with young people in middle school and high school. And like you, I've seen some really interesting things. I like to use that word interesting because sometimes I see passion from students and sometimes I don't. And what I really want to see from them is what they're really interested in, because when you see that, the lights go off and it's like, wow. And then not only is it awesome for us to see, but it's also empowering because it motivates us as well as those around them. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love this topic. Are we preparing students for life in the 21st century? And because of the work that you've done and the work that you've shared with me, I think it's appropriate to start with this quote from a teacher who resigned from New York State. He resigned, John Taylor Gatto. Hopefully I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He resigned after winning Teacher of the Year. So he actually posted his resignation letter to the Wall Street Journal. So his quote goes, "Whatever an education is, it should make you a unique individual, not a conformist. It should furnish you with an original spirit with which to tackle the big challenges. It should allow you to find values which will be your roadmap through life. It should make you spiritually rich, a person who loves whatever you are doing, whatever you are, whomever you are with. It should teach you what is important, how to live, and how to die."
Beautiful quote. So basically, that's very in line with Viktor Frankl in terms of each person is unique and irreplaceable, an individual. And our primary motivation as human beings for living is to find and discover meaning. So one of the reasons he actually quit was because he saw this system. And when we talk about education in the sense of the school system, it's a mechanistic system that processes people like an institution or a factory would with outputs at the other end. And this is dehumanizing, because as humans, to have to always conform and fit into someone else's definition or external value system is very debilitating to us as humans. Because as humans, we are a mind, body, and human spirit. Now, this is a human dimension. It's not in the religious sense. It's in the sense that we are separated from mammals in our ability to set goals, step away from ourselves and view our lives, to have a conscience that tells us and guides us, tells us what to do and guides us. It gives us our ability to love, and it gives us our ability to have passion for things. So this unique humanness doesn't fit well in institutional systems. And that is exactly what we've done. We've in particular, because you and I are so focused on youth, is that we have taken the youth and we have placed them in these systems based on their age and ignored their humanness. And this is not a, it's a challenge to the system, not to the people within the system. And I'm going to say that very loudly, that I believe strongly that the administrators and the principals and the teachers are stuck in this same confined system that has taken away their freedom of choice, their freedom to be who they are. And that is the issue. We've decided that as humans, and we've done this throughout time, if you just get the right program, degree, grade, whatever, you're going to have a great life. But we ignore that each of us are different. What that great life is different for each of us. So what John Gatto talked about so much was the ability of each child to develop to the maximum of their very valuable potential in the world. And that is the system that we do not have. And it's why we see so much distress that's coming out of that.
So what's interesting, during this time period of COVID-19, I saw an article, actually the Wall Street Journal article you shared with me, and it was talking about adaptability. And Peter Drucker, the noted Peter Drucker, who basically said, one thing executives can count on, you can't count on much. And it reminds me of my sports days. Mm-hmm. You know, the quarterback would call a play in the huddle. He would come up, we would come up to the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden the defense was set up to stop that particular play. So the quarterback being the quarterback and having the ability to change a play is going to change the play to fit the scheme of the offense that we're running within the rules of how we're operating. Mm-hmm. So it's very much of how you have to be adaptable. Now, in order for that to work, of course, all of the players need to know and understand the plays beyond the play just being called. So they have to have that capability and the capacity to go beyond that play. So going back to Peter Drucker and the point, and I'd love for you to share with the audience the framework that you talk about adaptability and the other points along that particular continuum.
Right. So as parents, and even educators, how do we allow our children and our youth to develop the strength to deal with the issues that we're dealing with in life's uncertainty? Life's always been uncertain. Life has never not been uncertain. Matter of fact, Viktor Frankl would say, we're always trying to avoid the tragic triad, you know, and which includes this suffering and includes this death and things like that, that we're trying to always avoid or save ourselves or others from. And really, we don't have a lot of external control. We do have internal control. And what we've done is we've taken that away. So what I recommend to parents is that they teach their children to read. And when I say read, I do not mean the literal reading. I mean R-E-A-D. The first R is responsibility, is teaching our kids responsibility. And that means freedom of choice that has consequences. That's how you get that resilience, by the struggle, by the making mistakes, but it's you are owning this, it's theirs. And I think that is critical, that we teach kids to be responsible. We're seeing it right now with this pandemic. We can't rely on big systems and big institutions. We're brought down to our neighborhood, to our homes, that we have to be responsible. Imagine if we taught responsibility, because responsibility involves freedom of choice And also that freedom is not freedom from having to do anything. It actually involves freedom to do stuff, to take care of ourselves, to take care of others. So responsibility is key, and responsibility goes with struggle, and it goes with freedom, it goes with choices, it goes with mistakes.
So, you know, it's interesting when you say that, it empowers them to do what they do best.
Yes, and I think that the thing is that when I work with youth, I also mentor youth from foster youth to kids in high achieving homes, which are also now considered at risk based on what we've done. But I think it does empower them. And I've seen that shift go from being a victim of a system to empowered to take control of their own lives, and just the mental health shift that happens when that occurs. The second E is exploration, the need to allow our children to explore who they are and how they fit in the world. And this is critical. This involves relational experiences with many age groups. It involves it trying and experiencing different types of work. It involves getting out of this silo that we've placed them in as absorbers of information, which is not learning. What? To have data thrown at you and regurgitated in a finite bubble on a test and to spend so much time and energy on that aspect of their lives is really not allowing them the time that really they need to get out in the world and discover who they are and how to operate with different age groups, how to operate with different systems, different experiences. I want the people who want to go fishing, right? I want them to care about the national parks. I want the people to go surfing. I want them to care about the ocean. I want the people who have different interests to be out there doing their interests so that they care about those interests and they become passionate about protecting their interests as well. And finding other people. I mean, the connection is about just as you and I, two different coasts, two different people, we connect over this meaning, this tremendous mission that we feel called to. And so really it's the second E is exploration. Get them out there.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen that with the youth that you've worked with, that when they get out and have time to do the different things they're interested in, how it changes who they are.
Well, one of the examples are two twins that go to a high school where I do a lot of work. One actually has her pilot's license. The other is planning to go to college and become a professor. So it's so cool to see two twins who have very much different interests. One is a pilot, very close to becoming a pilot who can fly solo because she's been putting in the hours. So she's actually practicing something that she wants to do. So when you hear that, you're like, wow. And you're like, what grade are you in? I'm a senior. And I'm like, yes.
Yes.
And when she talks about it, she's so excited, and it makes, you know, it brings joy to your heart, especially when someone at that age finds something that's fulfilling.
Yes, and that is the key term, is fulfilling, and we're going to talk about this in subsequent issues, or subsequent podcasts about the difference between being happy and being fulfilled.
Right.
But for right now, let's stick with our read. So the A in read is adaptability. And that is the ability to pivot, the ability to change and adapt to different circumstances. So the Wall Street Journal article that you were talking about was saying the keys to successful leadership were adaptability and the ability to tolerate ambiguity. Okay, life, hello, life. And so certainly as our economy is transforming, we are not in Kansas anymore. We are in an entirely different paradigm. We are in a world that is virtual and physical and always moving in between. We are pioneers across this new landscape. So we need to adapt to survive. And our children are not allowed to adapt because adaption requires failure. Adaption requires struggle. Adaption requires getting faced with things that you have to figure out how to change. This is what we call critical thinking. Well, critical thinking happens when you care about something. Not when you have this made up project and the made up thing, and then this is what you're supposed to do. That doesn't have meaning to them. But you say, how do I see my friends in the middle of a pandemic? And they're creating all sorts of, you know, even prom dances or people or choirs or over Zoom, you know, happy hours, you know, whatever it might be. And so we're solving for that as we go through this. And I think that that whole experiential component that adaptability happens cannot happen in our school system, in a standardized system. It is not, even the Navy has moved away from this. There was another article that was saying that the Navy has decided to change its boot camp to be 80% experiential and only 20% classroom, because they realized that just having the sailors study a concept was not enough to prepare them, so that when they would go out on the ship, they didn't understand. And so they have said, we have to train them for the reality. And that only happens in something that truly simulates that reality. And so that that particular component of adaptability is so key. We do it as parents all the time, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting going back to the sports analogy as well. Like, so I was a receiver. I was also a quarterback in high school. But, you know, as a receiver, sometimes, you know, I was just in tune with my quarterback. We saw what the defense was doing or my particular defender, and we would have a little signal. And he and I would just be in tune with one another, that we would go, okay, if he does this, I'm going to do that. And it was just, you get there by practicing. So what you said about the sailors, the experiential learning, and what the Navy is doing, I think is just awesome, because it gives the individuals the opportunity to be expressive, to learn as they're doing. And that's exactly what we want. So I love the adaptability and being able to pivot.
So absolutely. And then that leads us to our D, which is discovery of meaning, the essence of life. It is not enough to have the picket fence, the job that pays well. It has to be deeper. There's, I'm a huge fan of Johann Hari, his Lost Connections, and I was just rereading his book the other night, and he was talking about reading about the 1950s feminists, or 1950s housewives, before feminism really exploded in the 1960s. And they were going to the psychologist saying, I have the house, I have money, I have a picket fence, I have 2.2 kids, and I'm miserable, right? Because it wasn't enough. They did not have control over their lives to pursue the things that mattered to them, which is unique to each. We cannot give meaning to somebody. We cannot create it for them. We cannot discover and manufacture this or for them. It is unique to every single human being to discover their own meaning. And meaning gets discovered in things we create, what we give to the world, things we do, activities. This for us is giving us tremendous meaning. It comes in experiences, being in nature, in beauty, in a relationship where we care about one another. We have that sense of meaning and belonging. And in the event that we're in circumstances that are beyond our control, we have cancer, or Viktor Frankl being in a concentration camp. It is in our ability to adjust our attitude in how we look at it, but meaning is always present. And that discovery of meaning involves listening to what the noetic dimension, which is that human spirit, which is telling us and guiding us, but we suppress that. We're like, no, follow these external benchmarks. Don't learn to listen to yourself and your conscience and your passions and whatever. I think this is why we validate whether or not they get straight A's. Well, somebody who gets a straight A's and a valedictorian, right? What are they? They're chief conformists. They're the people who know how to compete the most, who suppress their passions in order to be able to be generalist And what happens in the work world? Well, guess what? They used to work out really well when we had corporate ladders, right? When it was, you had to conform. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, that in and of itself is a whole segment that we could spend time on it.
Yes.
And I'm excited to talk about that because grades are just the reflection in time. At a point in time when someone takes a test, that just tells me they did well on that test at that point in time. Mm-hmm. So if I ask you a question unrelated to something else, or even to that material a month or two down the road, and you're not able to share with me how it was used, what does that tell me?
Right. Applied knowledge, not knowledge.
Right.
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 Because the internet changed the world. We don't need knowledge. We need to know what to do with it. So,
and you just said something really interesting. With the internet and with Google, you can do searches to find information that relates to answering a particular question. Mm-hmm. But what we need in a situation like this pandemic, COVID-19, how do we respond? What do we do? What are the answers to questions that we don't even know what the questions are?
But we're so busy and trained to have our blinders on that the only way you do that is in a classroom. And yet we now, I call it the Gutenberg Bible moment. So when the Gutenberg Bible was invented in the 1400s, it changed the world because it developed the printing press. Right. It was the first time that they moved letters around and they could mass produce something. And suddenly everyone who first started with nobility, but eventually it moved down, learned how to read outside of a classroom, by the way. Grandmas taught each other, older siblings taught each other, people taught themselves, whatever it might be, they learned. And we have that moment now with the internet. The internet, we have the ability to leap. Kara, who is our engineer and person who does the website and does everything, when she was in college, they did not teach this, right? And because it's new, it's just been developed in the past 10 to 15 years. Right. She taught herself everything on YouTube. She takes classes. She interacts with people who are on the forefront of all of this. And she has learned to do it on her own. And that's what's so exciting, even about this pandemic moment. What do you want to learn? What do you want to discover? We have MOOCs. 100 million people are taking online classes in everything from art to data science, right?
Well, I was just going to say, so Kara is a great example of the framework, READ, responsibility, exploration, adaptability, and discovering. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, she dove deep because she wanted to learn. Mm-hmm. And when you have that, you don't need someone telling you what to do.
No.
You continue to go on. And then all of a sudden you discover, wow, here's this, here's that. So anyway, I think I love the framework. I think this is a great place to stop this particular segment. I hope that if anyone who's listening has any questions, please feel free to ask at q-edup.com. And we'll love to address your questions and anything that pops up. But, in this conversation about are we preparing students for life in the 21st century, I think this particular framework that Pam just shared, READ, is a great one for students and also parents to employ and a great way to teach. So thank you for joining us in our first segment.
Yes, thank you. It was so enjoyable. Huh.